Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to From the Touchline in Seattle. I'm Aaron Heinzen. Todd Stauber is along with me via phone somewhere in Boise, Idaho. I think he just needs a few minutes to connect. Anyways, we'll get started. Big shout out, though, to Todd Stauber. His Pac Northwest boys team winning today 5-3 to get into the semifinals of Regional 4. So, congratulations to him. Successful time down there in Idaho. And, yeah, looking forward to hearing him and what he can do. So it should be pretty exciting semifinal and big-time week for Mr. Stauber. Anyways, we've got quite a show for you today. Women's World Cup, of course, setting off right now. Germany taking on France at halftime. Almost at halftime there. The last score I heard was 0-0. So it is a tight match there between two Western European rivals. We also have Major League Soccer, big-time Heineken rivalry week this time.
Heinzo, can you hear me?
Yes, I sure can, Todd.
Well, there we go.
Just was talking, kind of introducing the show. I don't know if that even got picked up, but here we are.
Yeah, well, I could hear it.
Oh, good. Oh, fantastic. Well, yeah, like I was saying, still 0-0 there between Germany and France?
We are looking at 0-0. Exactly.
Oh, okay. That's a tight score. I would have thought it would have been a bit of an edge for Germany after their annihilation of Sweden, but France holding on.
Well, France, it's halftime, and yeah. They are holding on. That's exactly what they're doing right now.
They're still alive.
We are still alive.
Well, good.
We're still here.
Good.
I'm going to go from here, Hans. I'm going to take us over, if you don't mind.
You're going to take what?
I'll take us over from here, if you don't mind.
Oh, that'd be great. Absolutely.
I appreciate it. You know, we got a huge show here, Heinzo. We got a lot going on. It's obviously, Women's World Cup. We're right in the middle of it. And we got Copa America. Some interesting things going on down there.
Oh, yeah.
And then
no question.
It's a bit of a junk show down there. We are also looking at a little bit of transfer news. And the big thing we got going is MLS Rivalry Week.
Yes.
Fantastic.
Yes, indeed.
I'm really
happy
the MLS has done that. I just want to say, it's a little Americanized, and I realize that, but there really are some great rivalries in the MLS. We're going to start off tonight with Houston Dynamo, FC Dallas, and then as we make our way through the weekend, we'll be heading into, of course, the biggest rivalry in the league, which, as you well know, having played for the Portland Timbers, and as I well know because I happen to play for the Seattle Sounders, it's Portland Timbers and the Seattle Sounders, Heinzo. Any thoughts on that as we, just before we, I think, are we bringing in Scott Thompson, former Portland Timbers defender, to talk about that?
Yeah, we absolutely are. Scott's going to be calling in here in a couple of minutes. And the legend he's been was a huge part of the Timbers right up as they kind of went into their MLS season when they began the MLS back in 2010. But a huge part of, still involved in soccer in Portland down there, coaches and just a huge, huge player, played at UCLA, and so it'll be good to talk to him, see what he thinks. Obviously, Timbers coming off of that first ever win at Starfire against Seattle, that U.S. Open Cup crazy game. So, players missing all over the place for the Sounders, so I think that makes them a little vulnerable. They need something to get them going again. They've obviously struggled, but any time you get, especially down in that stadium, as you know, Stobbs, it's so intimate and so tight. And Portland does an incredible job of making it as loud as possible and always puts on a great display. I think it's a worldwide recognized rivalry now. You know, it's been going on for about 40 years, but now that it has a platform like MLS, it's going to be pretty exciting.
Well, it has been going on for 40 years, and, there's just so much to this because of the game that happened with the Open Cup a couple weeks ago. Obviously, Clint Dempsey is still serving his suspension. We'll talk about that a little later. It is a great rivalry. I would say it's a healthy rivalry for the league.
Absolutely.
And, I think you've got two coaches that genuinely dislike each other, which I love to see that. I mean, Siggy Schmidt and Caleb Porter, I don't think there's a whole lot of love there between the two of them. And
right.
In turn, I don't think there's a whole lot of love between the two, you know, clubs in general, especially with what happened the other night. There was fights in the stands between the fans going on at Starfire. I think this event's going to really, really kick off here, and I think it's going to be a great game. So.
Well, no question. The media coverage is certainly going to cover the U.S. Open Cup game and everything, the fallout after that, and it's just, you know, the proximity, and, you know, back when you and I played, I remember, you know, having played at the University of Washington, I knew half the team from college anyways on the Sounders, and coming up to play them, it was always just a lot of fun to get into it, try and beat guys that you knew, and the city, each city, you know, plenty of people have lived in Portland and now live in Seattle and vice versa, and just like, just 170 miles down the street, down the road, so close proximity, two great soccer-based towns, and it just makes for a great rivalry.
Yeah, well, great. I think the one thing that always stuck out to me in that rivalry is our good friend Roger Levesque, who has obviously been a Seattle Sounder for a long time. He went down there, I think it was in an off season or something, and ended up playing like two or three games for them. He was playing for Portland and actually got booed as he was playing for them, which I just kind of...
Exactly. They just couldn't forgive him.
I mean, to me, that really summed it up for me right there. So, you know, interesting deal.
Let's
moving on here while we're waiting for Scott. Let's talk Women's World Cup here. Obviously, game going on right now. Big game, Germany-France. Massive game coming up here for the USA against China. Just here in about an hour, hour and a half. Listen, Heinzo, Jill Ellis in the U.S. have been getting crushed here. They've just been getting crushed. And, you know, I think going into this game, they've got a whole lot to prove, really going into this game against China. I think more to themselves than anybody else.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, because they have a lot to prove. And even more so now, they're not going to have Rapinoe and they're not going to have Holiday, who both picked up yellow cards in the last game and are suspended. So, I mean, you're talking about two of the most creative players who've managed to conjure up any sort of offense the United States have had. So, I mean, the good news for them is they have a great back line, and Hope Solo is playing very well, and they haven't had too much pressure there. And China really doesn't offer that much offensively. But there's two teams that could be in a dogfight. If the United States can't create many chances, you just never know where that kind of thing can go. So, China is obviously the lowest-ranked team that's left in the tournament, and the United States have to be so happy they're not playing Germany. There's no question about it, but... I think it's going to be a tough game. History from the last time, remember the 1999 game when they went into that shootout, the classic shootout all those years ago, and the United States won it. So,
Brandi Chastain ripping her shirt off, and that was, I think, the last time we saw the U.S. women play a decent game.
Exactly, yeah. So it's been, you know, since they've won some gold medals, they just haven't really put a lot into it. So it's going to be a tough match for them, but I think the United States will be more than ready.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're right. Those spot on in the back are very solid. Hope Solo's, despite all of her trouble legally and in the press and everything, she's still the best goalkeeper in the world. So, hey, listen, Heinzo, we got Scott on here. We're going to jump over, talk to him a little bit about this Sounder-Timber rivalry. I'm going to click him on right now. Scott, are you with us?
Scott. Hey, guys. Yeah, I'm here.
All right. Hi, Scott Thompson on the line, everybody. Fantastic. Scott, so we introduced you.
Appreciate it. We're just getting going here, talking about the Seattle Sounder Portland Timber rivalry, something you're extremely familiar with. As we, you know, obviously a big Open Cup game, big win for the Timbers, a lot of extracurricular activity going on with Clint Dempsey and all the red cards. How have you seen this rivalry grow to what it is today? Which, you know, as we were just talking, Aaron and I, one of the biggest, obviously, rivalries here in the United States, but it's gaining worldwide notoriety, this rivalry.
Yeah, you know, it's not surprising that you get so much raw emotion in a match. You know, guys that are friends off the field or, you know, maybe hang out or talk to each other off the field, you know, when it comes to this game, it takes on a life of its own. I remember I got a stupid yellow card for throwing a ball at a friend of mine when we had I think it was an Open Cup game up in Starfire. Just stupid, but I was, you know, I was heated and I took exception to the way that he threw the ball at me and I just threw it at his back. I mean, just just dumb stuff. So yeah, it's you know, when you step on the field and the fans and everything, it's you know, you feel it. You feel it all the way to your core, and you want to get a result. So it's definitely a fun rivalry. I will say that. You know, I do enjoy watching Seattle lose. I enjoy, you know, when the Timbers play well against them. So it should be fun on Sunday.
Absolutely. Scott, you've been in a ton of these rivalry matches. Do you have one that sticks out for you in the past in your career at all?
You know, I have to say the Open Cup at our place was a tough one just because I felt that our team, I think it was maybe 2009, 2010, our team was playing really well. We had a good core group. We came into the game prepared, and then we, you know, gave up a goal in the first, I think, minute of the match. So to have a game like that where all the fans are hyped up, the stadium, I think, had close to 17, 18,000 people there, you know, and then to lose in such a tight game, a game that I think that we felt that we could win and prove a point. I mean, that was probably one of the last one that really sticks out and was tough to swallow. But it's always, like I said, it's always been a fun matchup. You know, I enjoy the times that we beat them, the times that they beat us. It was tough, but, you know, it wasn't, it felt like we were helping to grow the sport, grow the,
right.
You know, even at the USL and A-League level, you know, I felt like those matches helped that, you know, that tier of the American pyramid, if you will. So it was good. You know, it's something I enjoyed, and I hope the guys that I played against enjoyed it. You know, I still see them, you know, at different club events, you know, when I go up to Seattle or, you know, into Idaho, and I see them, you know, we still talk, we, you know, talk about the old days, and it was a healthy rivalry, I'd say.
Right, for sure. Yeah, great way of putting it, too, to kind of help grow the sport around the United States. What you still live down in Portland, kind of describe for people what Portland's like just before a match like this, with the stadium right downtown, and you know, well, let's just leave that to the Sounders coming there.
You know, you feel it in the weeks prior to the match, and everybody knows the date. You have it on the calendar. You go downtown, and everybody's either sporting their gear or talking about it. The casual fans are talking about it as well. So you know, you got people asking you, you know, hey, you ready for the game? You ready for this? You know, hey, get the win today. You got people lined up outside the stadium for, you know, a day or two in advance. And then on game day, you know, everybody's super hyped up. The TIFOs, the energy is beyond just a normal game.
So
you feel in every sense of the match. And then afterward, you know, when you get if you get the win, you're on cloud nine. If you get the lose, you know, you get the loss, you definitely feel it.
Right.
You feel like you've let down the city, when you don't win.
Go ahead, Todd.
Oh, thanks, Hines. I really appreciate that. Hey, Scott, talk to me a little bit about where Portland's at right now. I mean, obviously, not a great start for them, the Caleb Porter. You know, coming in, they've gotten better, progressively better as a big win for the Open Cup win. But then just here this last game, I mean, they got destroyed by L.A. and, you know, five goals. It was not a good situation for them. Where do you think they are right now in terms of mentally after that 5-0 loss to L.A.?
You know, it's a little strange because you watch them play, and even all year, they play a good brand of soccer. I mean, they keep the ball, they move the ball. You got guys interchanging. And then, you know, they just weren't getting the results. So it was nice to see them clicking and get on a little bit of a run. But, you know, they faced a hot L.A. team in a midweek game, which is difficult. So, you know, you hope that the team bounces back. And historically, they have always bounced back. But it's going to be a tough game, I mean, for both sides. You know, Seattle's somewhat depleted. You know, between the red card and injuries, you know, we're a little bit taking a knock as well. So, you know, it gives an opportunity for guys that don't normally play to step in and show. But I think the Timbers will bounce back, no doubt.
Well, it would be the perfect situation to bounce back from a 5-0 loss to, you know, beat your arch rival at home, obviously. So, I mean, it's certainly set up for them to do that. Hines, you got anything there? You had something going there you wanted to ask?
Yeah, certainly. Well, Cascadia rivalry, and Timbers kind of need to get on the Cascadia scoreboard there. Is that kind of a concern for Caleb Porter? Is he going to? I understand the spree as a maybe. You think he gets in the game and with his speed on the outside, or what are the possibilities you think he's going to do?
Yeah, it's tough. You know, Spree is definitely a guy that offers a spark. You know, Nanchoff got in the last game, and it seemed like he did okay. So I guess it's good to have the different options. Whether or not you go a little more conservative, I can't speak on it.
Right.
I personally, you know, if we're at home and you got the crowd behind you, you know, I would say put in more attack-minded players. But you never know.
It's going to be you're right. Either way, Portland are really going to want to get some points out of this, catch up. I mean, they're really only 4 points off the Sounders right now. So, I mean, kind of a slow start at first of the season.
To make up those points, now is the time. Because obviously, with every drop point, you know, it's obviously going to hurt you come playoffs. And with the field so crowded right now, you know, there's no real clear-cut team stepping away. You know, Seattle did it for a little bit. Now they've taken a little bit of a knock. LA is in the rise, but there's no one else really in the West that's really stepped up. You know, not like on the East Coast, we got DC, and that's 10 points ahead. I mean, that's you know, so it's a great opportunity to get points and to make a statement on the West, you know, and against a rival. So it's a great storyline for MLS just in general.
Absolutely.
Well, I think if you're Portland, you're looking at Seattle and you see the Open Cup loss, you see Oba and Clint out, then you see the 3-0 loss, you know, the loss to San Jose, and now a loss to Philadelphia. And I think if you're Portland, you got to be feeling really good, because where is it going to come from for Seattle up front? You know, Lamar Nagel, I think he's a little bit better coming from a wide position. He can play up front. He will play up front. You know, but I think it's a tough situation with Seattle without Clint and Oba. Unfortunately, they built their team around them, and with both of them out, I think if you're Portland, you're looking at this as a great opportunity to bounce back from that 5-0 win. And I agree with you 100%, Scott. It's packed in the Western Conference. It's anybody's. It, right now is the time somebody can jump ahead of Seattle right now while the Gold Cup's going, while Oba's hurt, and I think Seattle's in a little bit of trouble in this one.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's Seattle's a good organized team. You know, I was fortunate to play for Ziggy for a little bit, and he definitely makes sure everybody's on the same page, but they are lacking that spark. And in a game like this, where it is, you know, rivalry week, you need that spark on the field. You need that spark off the bench to, you know, to be a game changer. And I don't know if they have it right now. You know, so I hope they don't have it. You know, I'd rather see the team get the result. But
I love it. With the rivalries even going on the radio right now,
right?
So I love it.
That's great. Rivalry week. I love it. Hey, one more question, Scott. Timbers Army always famous for doing something crazy during these games. Do you have any idea what they might be coming up with this time?
I have no clue. But I mean, but they do have. I mean, that's one of my favorite parts is seeing the team.
Right.
You know, they're beyond creative. I have a warm spot, a small part of my heart that always goes to the Timbers Army, because they've always helped, you know, make the game, make the atmosphere that much better, and they go above and beyond. So it should be exciting. You know, one of my favorite ones when they cut down the Space Needle. That was probably one of the best.
Yes, I remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's extraordinary. Yeah.
Yeah, Heinzo, I actually think that you could have been the guy that, you know, the main guy that wears the hat and cuts the log, the chainsaw guy. I think you would have been a great candidate for that. If you would have grown your beard, I think you could have done that. I think you would have been it.
Right before I chopped my leg off with a chainsaw, so I have no idea what I'm doing.
No, your career was over anyway, so you would have been fine.
That's true. Hey, well, Scott, thanks so much for coming on. It's fantastic to hear about it.
Hey, no problem, guys.
Scott, we really appreciate it. Thanks so much, man. And are you you're going to the game, I'm assuming?
You know what? I got my it's going to be a little bit tough with 100 and whatever degree heat, so I think I might hang out in the pool this weekend and watch from home.
Nice. All right.
There
well,
you go. That makes sense.
Good.
My young ones don't last too long in the weather.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, I don't. I'm over in Boise, and it was 101 today out here at regionals. So I think I almost melted. So it's a tough one to move.
Oh, that's great. Well, Scott, thanks again. Take care. Good luck this weekend.
Thanks, Scott.
Hey, no
appreciate
problem,
it.
Guys. Talk soon.
Yeah. Cheers.
Bye.
Now what? What a great guest, Heinzo.
Yeah.
Scott Thompson, excellent. He's been a legend down there in Portland and involved in the soccer scene there for a long time. I was with the Timbers when he showed up from UCLA and drafted by the Galaxy and tore his ACL first year with Los Angeles. So came up to Portland to kind of get things going again. And really just a solid, eventually became the team captain, solid player, and a fantastic guy. So really nice of him to come on.
Well, I've got some news for you here, Heinzo. I just wanted to update you on the Germany-France game.
Oh, yeah?
France with a goal here, and they're up 1-0 in the 64th minute.
Wow.
Unbelievable.
It's truly amazing. I mean, and I was on the show, you know, obviously in the show last week, I said Brazil gets all the way to the semifinals or finals, and sure enough, Australia beats them 1-0. So you just never know. I mean, I think Germany is by far looked the best team, but it's soccer for you, and France has to be more than pleased.
You just never know. You just never know.
Yep.
And I mean,
exactly.
It's happened so quickly. I don't have a goal score here, but I'll get that up as soon as I can. But 1-0 France, 64th minute. If you're the U.S. right now, I think that's probably a good thing because I'm not sure the U.S. and Germany would go well for the U.S.
I kind of agree with you. At least, I mean, from what we've seen in the past, I mean, obviously things are different now in France. Able to hold their own at the moment, but you just never know. I wouldn't count the Germans out till the whistle's blown.
Yeah, you never count out the Germans. Never.
Yeah. I mean, Anya Mittag and Celia Sosic are both
two
of the most productive players in the entire tournament. So.
Yeah. Well, listen, let's get back to the U.S. and what we were talking about before we brought Scott on,
sure.
Because I think this is a pretty hot topic right now because you've got a lot of ex-players coming out, highly critical of Jill Ellis and April Heinrichs in the national women's staff. You know, Michelle Akers coming out pretty aggressively this week saying that, you know, she wasn't, you know, made it clear she's not a fan of how the team's playing, the tactics they're using. And I just want to bring up one other point here. The U.S. are 0-0 against Colombia. They get a penalty. And Abby Wambach, who, in my opinion, isn't good with either foot. She's only good with her head, but that's another conversation. She's not great with either foot. She chooses to use her weaker left foot and completely misses, you know, she's not even on target. To me, I don't know what that is. I don't know why that happens. I don't know if that's arrogance. I don't know what that is, Heinzo. Can you please, in your positive tone of life, can you shed some light on that for me?
Charles, I'm afraid I don't have anything here. I just think, you know, she thought that was going to be the best way she could put it in and obviously misjudged it. You know, you see Lloyd's taking the next one, Carly Lloyd, and she put it away no problem. So maybe that's Wambach's one chance, and now she's got to step aside and let Lloyd continue to take him. I just think you're right. The United States have never scored this or have never had an issue with lack of goals like they've had this tournament, and everyone's commenting on it. But you know, the fact is they're still in it, they're still winning, at least for now. So I think that's the one positive they can take. Also, obviously, the back line and Hope have been a big deal as well.
The back four and Hope are fantastic. The back four and Hope are fantastic. There's no question. And they're proving to be the best in the world. But, you know, with the resources, with the players we have, I haven't talked to one person that thinks that this team should be in a 4-4-2. Everybody, it's so clear. It's clear as day that a 4-3-3 is what you should be playing. I mean, okay, if Jill Ellis wants to smash the ball straightforward into Abby Wambach's head, fair enough, and she clearly does, okay? But why don't you play a 4-3-3 and put two flyers on the side of her? I don't care what the combination is. LaRue-Morgan, Morgan-Press, Press-LaRue. I don't care what the combination is. It's so clear that would be much, much better. Instead, you've got it smashing up to her. There's not one player. I mean, the midfield is non-existent. Part of the problem is you've had, you know, two players playing in there that aren't natural central midfield players in a 4-4-2. And so, you know, here you've got Lauren Holiday and you've got Carly Lloyd in there that they're not natural central midfield players in a 4-4-2. They're not. It's just they're not those
right.
players. And they're clearly lost. I mean, obviously you won't have Lauren Holiday for this game, but it's just, it's mind-boggling to me. Absolutely mind-boggling to me. And what's the only thing worse than that to me is that you get Jill Ellis in these interviews and she's so arrogant and so, you know, well, we're still winning and this and that. It just, I don't know. And we're going
right.
to get to Jill Ellis a little later in the show, which is a hint. but I mean, I have a real problem with this, what's going on, Hines. And as you know, I don't put a positive spin on many things on this show. And this is just feeding right into me.
Well, you know, we'll see, what they can do against China. Perhaps they'll finally get a switch, but I agree with you. I mean, the fact that Alex Morgan finally got on the score sheet was nice to see, but it wasn't pretty as usual, and I think that's what people have come to expect from U.S. women's soccer. Not only they dominate win, but they need to win well. So it's a sign that the expectations on this team, but like you said, I think it's pretty obvious the kind of formation they should be running, but he's just not doing it, and for whatever reason. maybe it is his pride, just knowing she can stick with it and get away with it.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I've got the goal scorer here for France. I can't even say her name properly, and I don't know who she is, so I'm not sure that's going to help us all. But it's Louisa Nassib, I think. N-E-C-I-B.
Good.
Well, you've been to France before. How would you pronounce that, N-E-C-I-B?
N-A-C-I-B. I think you hit it. Nassib. Sounds good.
Can you say it in Arsene Wenger voice for us?
Nassib.
Perfect. Okay. I feel much better about it now. I feel a whole heck of a lot better about this now. Well, I will say this about China. Extremely industrious in terms of how hard they work. I mean,
yes.
I think I mentioned a couple of shows ago, our U18 boys at Pac Northwest played China in a game at Starfire while China was there training. I got to watch them train. This is a fit team, man. I mean, these girls are fit. They can literally run all day. I mean, they'll run for that entire 90 minutes and another 90 if they need to. I watched them run right through 18-year-old boys. They just wore them down over the course of time and ended up beating them 4-2 when they were down 2-0 at one point, but they just wore them down. And, you know, I think a lot of people are looking past China without Megan Rapinoe, who's been a part of all but one goal the U.S. has scored in this World Cup, by the way. And without Lauren Holiday, I don't think this is an easy task for this team. And I think everybody in the United States just assumes it's going to happen. And I don't think that's the case at all. Check in with the Germans right now and see how they're feeling about how confident they were getting by France.
Right, no question. And you look at China's goal against Cameroon, it's a nice set piece. They only had four players in the box. Real calmly taken. They didn't create too many other chances, and Cameroon could kind of dominate them in the air, but they said afterwards, every time you played China, you could see everybody, players were all over the place defensively, just on them instantly. So it is. It's going to be a hard-working team. You know, United States obviously missing two huge offensive players, and they're going to have to be on their toes. So you're right.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right, especially what's going on as well in Germany and France right now. Anything can happen. Everybody knows it's soccer. So by no means is it an easy way through. Is there going to be an easy
path? Yeah, I don't think so. And, you know, I think obviously it'll be a huge lift if they do get by China. And, you know, I think, I think getting Megan Rapinoe back will be huge. I'll be interested to see, you know, kind of how, what they do here and how they go, and how, you know, how they choose to play without her in there. But, I think somebody on this show, I don't know if it's you or me, I didn't mention that Rapinoe might have a breakout performance in the World Cup.
I think it was you, Stubbs.
No, I don't know if it was, it doesn't matter, but I think if the show mentioned that she might be, she might have a breakout performance. Now, I wouldn't bring that up. I'm not boasting. I'm just, if we hadn't got every prediction we've ever made wrong except for this one, I probably wouldn't bring it up. But we've been wrong about every prediction we've ever had except for this one. So I just kind of have to bring it up.
Oh, yeah. I think
she's definitely one of the biggest keys in this team this time around.
Well, no question. And let's just look ahead to tomorrow, Australia. Kind of the surprise of this tournament, I might say. taking on the very strong Japanese team, and then we've got England against the host Canada, which I think is going to be a really, really great match, that England-Canada game.
Yeah.
Thoughts on those two games, Heinzo?
Oh, you know, I think Australia are very, very exciting and slightly fortunate to get by Brazil. I think maybe the Japan will prove to be a bit too much, very highly organized. Another team like the Chinese defensively close you down right off the bat. I think that's going to be a struggle for Australia this time around. And, you know, I think Canada hosts, they're going to do it. I think they're going to beat out England. England will have a strong start. They've got some good technical players, but I think in the end, Canada is going to be just a little bit too much for them.
I think it could be interesting. I think the Canadians have fed a lot off of, you know, obviously the home crowd and everything. But, you know, when I look at that Canadian team, I mean, I kind of see the opposite in what I see in the U.S. I see a team with not a really strong roster, aside from a few players overachieving, basically based on, you know, They've got a pretty decent draw and a pretty not a, I'm not going to say there's no easy run through any World Cup, but you know it's been okay for them. And also, you know, I just think that they're feeding off the crowd. Where here you have the U.S. team who I think are vastly underachieving, big time.
Right.
And if I look at the Australia and Japan game, gosh, I mean, I look at the Australia U.S. game and they were very good against us. I think that game goes another 10 minutes, and I'm not sure the result's the same. I really like this Australian team, I do believe Japan is very similar to China, fit, industrious, you know, they're going to defend very well, they're going to be extremely organized. I just think Australia's got something, and, you know, I mean, I always love the underdog, Heinzo, you know that, so I'm going to go with Australia in this game.
Okay.
And, you know, I just have a feeling. I just have a feeling. Not a feeling enough to go to Vegas and put any kind of money down.
Right.
You know, just I would say it's more of a hunch, a friendly hunch.
Oh, okay. Well, I think, absolutely. You definitely have some good points there. We'll just have to see how much longer they can sustain that. I mean, obviously, they're a huge confidence boost beating Brazil. But, again, it's going to be a tough one. But
right.
Been wrong before.
Oh, we've been wrong. there's no question about that. You're listening to Todd Stauber and Aaron Heinzen. We're here on From the Touchline. Typically, we're in Seattle. Today, we're not. Heinzo's in Tacoma, and I'm in Boise, Idaho. So we're going to still keep the name because we love Seattle, and that's our home. It's kind of a cool name for the show, but we're not even there. We're not even close to there. But we're on every Friday a little later today. Thanks for tuning in. Sorry about the time change. We will be off the air next Friday with 4th of July weekend going on, but we'll be back July 10th. I'll be broadcasting from San Sebastian, Spain on that one, Heinzo.
Oh, fantastic, Stauber. Looking forward to your thoughts on Spain then.
Yeah. It's a little bit crazy right now. We're going to move on here. Let's talk Copa America, and we're on to the semis. Some interesting situations here. In the last round of games, Edison Cavani, with a little bit of trouble there, and you know some awful play acting and just what a horrible scene. I mean, unbelievable! What a gong show! And the entire Copa America, I've been so disappointed in how these people have acted, how the players have acted, how the coaches have acted. I mean, this is like, I mean, I don't even know what to say, Heinz. And it's just it's a free for all. It feels like.
Yeah, it's just, you know, there's always, you know, you get the South American teams together and it's such heated rivalries. Definitely some of the biggest in the world, no question. And you've got maybe some of these stars, players that are used to getting maybe some better treatment because they're at these big European clubs and they just don't get it down there, I think. You saw that example in Neymar. You know, he goes off and now he's out of the tournament. Yara is absolutely... I think moving on to that one between him and Cavani, I mean, just absolutely disgraceful kind of thing. And I'm glad. I'm glad. Great reaction from the tournament to kick him out. Great reaction, I think, even from Mainz, who where he plays in Germany.
Yeah.
Saying, you know, if a transfer, if he's open to be traded, if someone comes along and wants him, you know, he can go. So
yeah.
You know, there's just no excuse for it. I mean, that's just. I think he's really going to suffer for this, for especially getting caught. You know, on camera,
well,
you can see he's just cut his hand right in Cavani's butt, and you know, who isn't going to react to something like that? It's absolutely ridiculous. So I have no place in the game, and especially afterwards, I just can't. I'm right there with people who are not a fan of the flopping, the diving, and just the play acting. I mean, it just has no place in the game. So
I'm hoping this trend continues. Well, I think it's great that people are realizing what's going on and that people are cracking down on this. I think it's fantastic that Means has gone ahead and said, this guy's out of here. I mean, I would be surprised if he's there next year, but the question is who's going to take him, you know? I don't know who would.
Right.
Listen, you've got all these South American players, and Lucas Suarez. He's not even playing in the tournament still because he's been eating people on the field. now you've got this all going on. What goes on down there? Why? Why is this only happening in these kind of, with these players, South American players?
Right.
Neymar completely lost the plot, and we talked about Neymar after the Champions League final. The ball clearly hits his hand, and he's trying to argue with the referee. I don't have any tolerance for it. I'm so glad. And has Yara indeed been kicked out of the tournament?
Yes. Yeah, he's out. He is suspended. So Chile lose him for the rest of the tournament.
Him and Neymar are hanging out somewhere.
Yeah. Well, I've heard Gary Neville talk about this before, the old Manchester United guy, and he said, players do whatever they can to win the game. He was talking about diving at the time, saying, they're diving, sportsmanship. If you get caught, you get punished, you get a yellow card, you miss the next game. That's, you're trying to win, and you got caught, and you get punished. So that's kind of the spin he puts on it. But I think, for diving, that's going to be part of the game. You brush a forward who's running by you or whatever as a defender, and he goes down and he gets a penalty kick. Well, that we're always going to see stuff like that. But I think for me is where the line is drawn. It's exactly what we saw happen between Cavani and Yara. I mean, obviously Cavani reacts. How could he not?
Yeah.
When he gets something like that, and then for Yara just to fall on the ground as if he's been shot is just that goes past like any sort of competitive or anything. It's just like kind of malicious and just real cynical part of the game. So it just doesn't have anything to do with the sport anymore at that point in time. So perhaps Neville's obviously not addressing that whatsoever. And I do agree with him to a point. But anyway, I'm glad that this is going to be it's disciplinary actions coming down. So hopefully it will.
Well, let's talk about the next time. The actual soccer that was played on the field, which, mind you, there wasn't a whole lot of it. But Chile did end up winning the game.
Yep.
Uruguay ended with 9 men. It was 1-0. A late strike for Mauricio Isla. 1-0, they're on their way to the semifinal. You still have some good players there for Chile. Arturo Vidal, who, has made a couple of appearances in the bottom three.
No question.
He's still a good player, despite the fact he smashed his Ferrari up in the middle of the tournament while he's hammered. But, he's still a very good player. And I think you've got, despite it all, you've got a decent matchup here going into these semifinals. Because, if you look at the other game, you've got Bolivia getting knocked out. And now here you go with Argentina. You've got Bolivia getting knocked out, though.
Peru?
By Peru, and I still think you have some good – there's a good chance to have 3 good games remaining in this tournament.
Absolutely, yes. Tons of – and tonight's game, Argentina-Colombia, is definitely, for me, one of the big favorites. You got all kinds of matchups there, and Falcao, is he going to play again because he hasn't done much again in this tournament, and how much longer do they hang on to him? Does Jose Pekerman still choose him? And his options of Jackson Martinez, Cuadrado, Lara. I mean, absolutely, by far, I think this is the most thrilling matchup that we've seen so far in the Copa America. So, pretty exciting game still to come, and plenty more to offer from the tournament. But it has been, and Chile, who have never won the Copa America, that is a great twist, and good to see them as the host still in.
If you go to that, if you take a look at Peru. You've got Paulo Guerrero with a hat trick. It was his first 3 goals of the tournament, but you got him on a hat trick. He's obviously a guy that can score some goals. And I think the game tonight, Argentina-Colombia, is going to be a very good game. Here's something I wanted to ask you about, though. I feel like, you've got a lot of players that play these super long club seasons. It's a full year, hard games, tough games. You got guys like Messi and these guys, Sergio Aguero. can they push this tournament back even 2 weeks to give them a little extra rest? I know it maybe gets in the way at the start of next season, but to me, it almost seems like a lot of this is happening. You know, all the junk that's going on. I mean, how much of this would you put on the fact that these players are just simply tired, and they're probably pretty wound up?
Yeah, you know, I think you got a good point, Todd. I'm sure that at the end, it's kind of the last thing. You know, it's almost your season finishes, and then you have to ramp up again for the Copa America. But I think probably what they would rather, I mean, they have to do that, though. They have to do it right off the season, because you can't let them go off and have 2-3 weeks of vacation and then bring them in, and then you have to have some sort of mini camps to get them back in shape and get them going, you know, before the preseason. And I think the clubs wouldn't want that either, since, you know, some of those guys will get knocked and picked up, and then they're coming into the club preseason injured and banged up and missing games. So I think this is basically the only way to do it, and it's just the nature of the way the game is now at the highest level. You're basically playing, you know, 11 months out of the year, and, you know, for better or for worse. And the demand is there. People will watch it on TV, and as long as that happens, that will be the schedule. But I agree. I think some of these guys are just coming off just exhausting runs. Now you got to go play in another high-octane, you know, winner-takes-all kind of tournament against a lot of people, and you say, you know, maybe I just need a break from soccer for some of these guys. But
I think to these players, obviously the Copa America means a great deal. I mean, there's a lot
for
of
sure.
pride with these South American countries. So I think they, you know, to me, what I'm seeing, they're mentally exhausted by the end of this season, you know, their club season, and they want to win this, but I mean, some of them might just not have it in there. So, I mean, as a result, you've got guys poking fingers in other guys' butts. I mean, come on, give me a break, man. Is this Sesame Street? What is going on?
that one's just unexplainable, but I think, you know, tempers, anytime, you got to combine it with just the fact that it's one of those huge rivalries. I mean, soccer's such a big deal down there, and these guys, everybody wants to win, like you said, and people start to do crazy things. And no question, there's definitely some tired legs and some tired minds out there after all that, and they do need a rest. Probably getting messages from their buddies on other teams as they hang out at the beach. But, you know, they do want to win the Copa America. It's a huge tournament. Chile, especially, since they're hosts, and they've never won it before, so... You know, obviously Messi and Argentina have some to go for as well, because he's never won anything in an Argentine jersey since an Under-20 World Cup, or you count the Beijing Olympics 2008, he won the gold medal there. But other than that, it's been cricket. So, you know, everybody's gunning for it. It's obviously still competitive. All the big countries are still in it. Colombia, Argentina, the host, Chile, and Brazil, of course. So, yeah, I guess Uruguay would have been on the other one, but... yeah, it's going to be, you know, still lots to play for in Brazil, Paraguay as well. So,
Well, let's just go over what we have here. You know, tonight, obviously, we've got Argentina, Colombia. Tomorrow, Brazil, Paraguay should be a good game there. Monday, we have Chile and Peru playing, which I think is going to be another good game. So, you know, so you've got the, I mean, like I said, I think we've got games ahead of you that are going to be very good, and they could be very good if they can just not lose the plot. I mean, these guys are losing their mind, Tonto. They're literally losing their mind.
Yeah, I think, you know, you get pulled in the drama of the sport. Everybody knows stuff, and maybe they wouldn't in the heat of the moment. I think, obviously, the thing on Yara is he just went way too far and got caught doing it. So,
well, I think he's going to pay for it beyond... Beyond
yeah,
to sit out the rest of Copa America, he's going to pay for this, because nobody wants crap in their team.
No question, especially in the soccer world. I think if it continues to roll like this, and it's gotten a lot of press, he will definitely be known as the guy that did that, and that is the last thing you'd want. You know.
Yeah. You were the guy that put your finger in Cavani's butt, and then.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I remember you. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's not where how you want to be known.
Kind of, yeah. So I think he's going to be regretting that. Ruined his tournament, no question. And his team's got to be looking at him like, what are you thinking? You know, you could see one of his buddies after he goes down and then stands up, like motioning to the referee. I think I didn't see who it was. One of his buddies comes by and just pushes him away and gets him out of there. A smart move, but it almost looked like one of those pushes, like what are you doing, kind of thing. So anyway,
definitely. Well. Yeah, definitely. You're listening to Todd Stauber and Aaron Heinzen here on From the Touchline in Seattle. We're on every Friday. a little later today, but we'll be off next Friday, back on July 10th, as I'll be broadcasting from San Sebastian, Spain, and Heinzel will be in Seattle.
Sure will.
We're gonna move. Yeah, you sure will. We're gonna move on here, though. Let's just talk a little bit about more of the rivalry week, because we've got. I mean, we're not just looking. You know, obviously it starts off tonight, where we've got FC Dallas, Houston Dynamo, but and then we move on as we go through the weekend. There's really, really some great games that are coming up. Saturday. Toronto, DC United. I'm not sure how much of a rivalry that is, really, but yeah, I'll take it. Whatever. They're kind of close together, I guess, actually.
Yeah, it'd be more of a New England DC, I believe, but yeah.
Yeah, I would say so. But San Jose, LA Galaxy is going to be a great game. I think Sporting Kansas City, Colorado is always a good matchup. And then as we move into Sunday, obviously the two big ones: Portland Timbers, Seattle Sounders. And New York City FC and New York Red Bulls, a new rivalry, but one that I think is going to prove to be a good one. New York City on the rise. New York Red Bulls, obviously a team that has been in the league forever and has found a lot of success there. And so I think that's going to be a couple of great games there on Sunday. Thoughts on that game, Heinzo?
Well, you know, Red Bulls took off and had a great run for a while. Seattle actually beat them here 1-0 a couple weeks back. Mm-hmm. And now they're only 3 points separated from New York City. And New York City, obviously, having the money, Lampard's showing up, possibility of Andre Pirlo showing up, that's very exciting for the league and for everybody.
Boy.
So they're collecting momentum. You know, a couple people rising out of the ashes. It's, you know, like it's been said, Major League Soccer is a streaky league, and you know, we're seeing Orlando's now sitting in third, but like Scott said a little bit on the show, DC United's kind of running away with everything at the moment, 10 points ahead of New England closest. So
yeah, if you look at the Eastern Conference, I mean, you've got DC United clearly 10 points up, but between then you've got only, I mean, you really only have 7 points separating second to ninth place. Between New England Revolution, it's on 24 points, and New York City FC on 17. I mean, you know, 7 points isn't a whole lot, and like you said, it's a streaky league, and you know, I think you can see things turn upside down here really easily. I mean, New York Red Bull, New York City FC, just three points off each other, and you know, if you look at the Sounders and Portland Timbers, obviously they're only 4 points off each other. So not only are these rivalry games that we're getting here, but you're talking about games that you know, that are going to have some serious implications. The Seattle Sounders need a result, man. They need a result right now because they're in a bad place.
Well, they you know, like you said, we talked to Scott earlier about it, but no Dempsey, no Obafemi. Martin's also on the injured list is Osvaldo and Chad Barrett. So those are key players. I mean, Chad Barrett's instantly the guy you turn to after Oba Dempsey. So he's out. It's going to be a big test for a lot of the young kids who went to Philadelphia, and the fact that they didn't get a result at Philadelphia is a bit disappointing. Some of those guys getting an early start, like the Aaron Kovar, and you know, Roldan's going to have to step up big time, and Darwin Jones. This now is the time for them to start to make an impact for the Sounders. No question about it. And LA, meanwhile, you got LA heating up big time. I mean, they've scored 10 goals in 2 games. They beat Philadelphia 5-1, then they go and annihilate Portland 5-0. They've got Steven Gerrard showing up here. They've got an absolutely huge momentum. Robbie Keane's coming back. The guy they signed from West Ham United, Sebastian Letget, scored 4 goals in 4 games for them in the last 4 games. I mean, Bruce Arena's kind of got the timing so far with this league. So,
Look at LA Galaxy in the last 5 seasons. They didn't even start playing until
right about this time.
And you know, the fact that they have Steven Gerrard showing up is
scary.
Hurt the situation. It is scary. It really is scary.
Yeah.
It's scary if you're in the Western Conference, and really it's scary if you're in the Eastern Conference and you even have to face them at any point. So I think everybody in the Western Conference has their eyes on LA, and I think you're exactly right. If you look at what those guys have done in the last 2 games, it's just a sign of what's on its way. And I don't think that's good news for anybody, especially the Seattle Sounders, because they're not going to have Clint Dempsey for some time because of the Gold Cup. His suspension will be up, but and they're not going to have Obafemi Martins for some time because, you know, he's out, they say 3 to 6 weeks with this. But, you know, from what I'm hearing, it's more of a six-weeker. And when you're off 6 weeks, it's not like you come right back in and you're playing at full pace. And you got to get fit again. You got to get sharp again. That's really, realistically, 8 weeks until he's sharp, fit, and playing at the level we know Ovid can play at again.
Right. Yeah, it's a question. Definitely kind of a tumultuous time for the Sounders, exiting as well in the Open Cup like we did, like they did. And, you know, now they're in a rocky patch. So we'll see. This is where organizations that have the depth come through. And you know, they've got a lot of youth, got a lot of good players, and now's the opportunity. A lot of chances for players to step up and take control, you know. Andy Rose in midfield can start to rise. You know, Zach Scott again filling in the veteran in the back, and we'll see how it goes for them. But it's going to be a tough test.
Speaking of Zach Scott, give me your over-under on him getting sent off.
If there's one guy, he's definitely played in the most Timbers Sounders rivalry games. If there's anybody that knows him, Zach Scott does. I think he'll keep his composure. It's what his team needs right now. I mean, maybe a few years ago, I would say be pretty good odds, but there's no way
he's going to get a yellow. He's no question if he's on the field, he gets a minimum yellow. I think
he is such a competitor. You just never know.
I mean, the way Portland celebrated those goals at Starfire, I just have a feeling there's going to be some really bad tackles really early in this game. Should be interesting to see. I got a little update from you, Heinzen. Got a little update for you.
What do you got?
The Germans in the 84th minute. We're now in the 93rd minute in a little bit of extra time, and that game looks to be heading to added time.
That is.
Germany, France.
Who got the goal?
Let's see here. We're talking about Selina Sasic. Oh, it was a penalty.
Oh, there she is. Celia Sasic.
Celia Sasic.
Had those goals
Celia
as well
Sasic.
in their win over Sweden.
Yep. Well, there we go. It's kicking off there, Germany, France.
Righty.
Well, we're going to move on here, though, and we'll keep you updated on that as we go. But what we are going to talk about now, Heinzo, is your World 11.
World 11, Scott. Well, here we go. My World 11, of course, is coached by Scott Gibby Gibson, winningest coach ever. I have in goal, I have Hope Solo for the streak that the United States have going 333 minutes without conceding a goal. She's definitely a part of that.
Fantastic.
You know, she's been very quiet. You know, there's a lot of criticism, obviously, for fair reasons before the tournament, but you pretty much have heard nothing from her. She hasn't done an interview since the game against Australia. She had two huge saves there. Hasn't had to do that much since, but still the fact that she's leading the team or leading the back line from there, they've got to be real solid about that. The rest of the back line is all the United States. So Megan Klingenberg, Becky Sauerbrunn, two center backs right there. You got Allie Krieger at right back. Klingenberg's the left back. And Julie Johnston, the center back as well. So all kudos to that group right there for 333 minutes in a World Cup. Very impressive without a goal. So,
yeah, I mean, after the goal against Australia, they've basically given up zero.
Yeah, shutting out Sweden, Nigeria, and then Colombia. So pretty impressive.
Yeah, impressive. Fantastic.
So moving on, midfield. Got Mizuho Sakaguchi. She has 27 goals and 93 international caps. She got the big-time winner over Holland, midfielder player. So, again, Japan looking solid, making another deep run, seeing if they can repeat as champions. It's going to be a tough call, but definitely exciting for her. Next up, Connor Doyle. If you get a chance, Dobbs, take a look at his goal. Absolute smasher. 1-0 win over Chicago. Just DC United picking up another 3 points now, you know, kind of running away with the supporter shield at the moment. So, like we said,
yeah,
streaky league, never know. It was a great goal from him. The other one, third midfielder in this crew, is Papito Marencia. You know who Papito Marencia is?
I don't. I think I met a guy by that name in Boise last night, but I don't know.
Papito Marencia is a midfielder and plays for the Curacao national team. And he scored their only goal in the 1-1 draw at Havana in Cuba to move Curacao on in the World Cup qualifying. So So now they are now in the third round. They beat Montserrat in the first. I think it was 4-3 in the end aggregate. Now they win on away goal rule and win over Cuba. They're into the third round. Incidentally, Stubbs, the coach at Curaçao is Patrick Kluivert. His mom is from the island. Kluivert grew up, obviously, in Holland and just recently was coaching the Dutch national team in last summer's World Cup under Van Gaal. But now he's at Curaçao. Since Van Gaal went to Manchester United, Giggs became his assistant coach, so Kluivert had to go find something else. So this is what he's doing. He's got his team into the third round of World Cup qualifying. It sounds like they'll either get Canada or Jamaica. But so far, I mean, Curaçao, absolutely out of nowhere, into the third round of World Cup qualifying. Pretty impressive, I think.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I had no idea Kluivert was there. It's great. And I'll bet Curaçao isn't a bad place to live either.
No, I don't think so either. Yeah, it sounds very nice. Forwards, I got Kaya Simone for Australia, I guess the winner over Brazil. She has 14 goals and 56 international caps. So she makes the team. Obviously, you mentioned him earlier, Paulo Guerrero, hat trick against Bolivia. How could you not have him in there? Absolutely fantastic.
Yeah,
and Claudio Pizarro of Bayern Munich up there makes a pretty deadly attack for Peru.
If you wouldn't have put him in, I was going to put you in the bottom three.
Oh, my bottom three debut. That'd be great. Last but not least, Sebastian Legette. I mentioned him before from West Ham, now playing for the Galaxy. Four goals in four games, one in the Open Cup and three in the league. Very effective player and just another addition for LA right now. See where they can go.
That's going to be an absolutely lethal team.
If they get completely healthy in the way they are, it's pretty fantastic. Pretty amazing.
I always enjoy the World 11, and that was a
World
11 to say. World 11's done. All right. Well, now we move on to the cynic on the show, and that would happen to be me. And we're gonna go through the bottom three here. As always, it's tough. There's a lot of donkeys doing stupid things right now, but I'm gonna go right now on number three. I'm gonna give it to Abby Wambach, stepping up to hit a penalty with your worst foot, which you have two bad feet, but your left one is even worse than your right. She should have laid down on the ground and just tried to head the ball. At least it would have been on target. Abby Wambach, number three on the bottom three. Number two, we're just going to stay with the women's national team because I think what they're doing right now is embarrassment shocking. I'm going to go with Jill Ellis. And I'm going to go with Jill Ellis because, one, she's arrogant. And she's playing this formation when everybody in the world knows she should be playing a different formation. And she comes on TV with this arrogant smirk and, you know, we're winning and this and that. And, yeah, you're winning because you have the pick of, no question, the best players in the world. You could pick three teams out of the U.S. player pool that could probably go and compete in this World Cup because you have so many players to choose from. Your style is terrible. Your coaching is not good enough. And no matter what happens in this World Cup, Jill Ellis, I hope that you're doing something else right afterwards. She's got number two.
There it is.
That's number two. We're going to switch off there, and I don't think there's any shock who's going to get number three. I'm going to call him Yara. He might be Jara, but whatever he is, he's not playing in the rest of the Copa America, and he's not going to be playing in the German Bundesliga next year. And I have a feeling we could be seeing him playing in a USL game that you're going to be announcing with S2 Heinzen. This guy is a joke. This guy is everything what's wrong with the game in the world right now. The diving, the play acting, everything else. Guy epitomizes what is wrong with the game. I'm even going to put him above Luis Suarez, who's been known to eat other players. I'm going to say what this guy's doing is worse. And Luis Suarez is just saying, listen, I'm a psychopath. I'm eating your arm, okay? This guy is trying to, I don't even know what he's doing. He's put his finger up guy's butt. He's also, I looked up, had another incident with Edson Cavani where he grabbed the other side of his crotch in a form.
Wow.
And Edson Cavani had the same reaction but hit him actually a lot harder. And this guy has no place in the game. I don't think people like this should be in the game. And I think the suspension that should come down for this should be very high. I mean, if Suarez is getting it for eating guys, then this guy should be getting it for what he's doing. I just think there's no place for it. It's just such a disappointment, and it's terrible.
Yeah, well, I agree with you on this one for sure. Definitely the number one for sure for this week.
He might get a residual and just stay there for a couple weeks. I'm not sure how this is going to pan out. It depends on how many people want to do stupid stuff from here on out. So, well, listen, Heinzo, that's it. I'm signing off here from Boise. Good luck in your games there at the Ranier Challenge in Tacoma. For Aaron Heinzen, I'm Todd Stommer. It's another show in the books from the Touchline in Seattle. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks.